Here at the Pennsylvania Game Commission, our passion is wild. Tune in to our podcast, Call of the Outdoors, as we discuss all things related to wildlife, hunting, habitat, and conservation across the Keystone State. Hear from men and women who have a passion for the outdoors and who value and work to preserve our state's wildlife resources for current and future generations.
Hey, welcome to Call of the Outdoors, Pennsylvania Game Commission's podcast. I'm real excited about today's guest, and we're talking about a subject that me personally, I'm not very familiar with, but my special guest today is all the way from Renovo, Pennsylvania. Now, a lot of people won't know where that's at because they think it's Renova, which I just learned that the correct pronunciation is Renovo, but Mr. Frank Sutliff, and Frank and I go way back to turkey calling days. How about it, Frank?
Yeah, I can't even remember the first time that we probably met. I want to say maybe a Wego, New York at the U.S. Open. Maybe, I don't even know what year that would have been, 89, 90,
that was
like 88.
It was 1986 was the first time I went to Wego, New York. And
It could have been then.
That's a long time ago, buddy.
It was.
The cool thing is we, like you and I and a lot of people in Pennsylvania, we share a passion, and it's hunting, and we both got into turkeys and turkey calling, and we've made so many great friends across this whole country. And, you know, some of my best friends I ever made have been on the road, but there's so much of it that comes back to the roots here in Pennsylvania, and we're so lucky to have a state where wherever you go, everything's famous for things that are different, especially when it comes to hunting. And where you live and your house is in the middle of bear country.
Correct. We are, I mean, I'm in northern Clinton County, and Clinton County, as most people know, you know, year in, year out is top one, two, or three in the state, you know, for bear harvest. And the unique thing probably about where I really live is I'm in, you know, the northern end. So most of our bears come from, you know, our northern end. So I would say we are right in the epicenter of, you know, black bear, you know, country right here. And it's probably not a more, you know, rugged piece of area either in our state, you know, having said all that.
Yeah, you guys get your work. You got your work cut out for you when you get after them up there. But, you know, Frank, a little bit about your history. You know, kind of where you came from and where you're at today. And you know, a lot of people probably use some of your products and don't even realize, you know, the folks behind it.
Yeah, I grew up in right here in, you know, Renovo. Graduated, you know, from Bucktail High school. How do you like that for a school name?
If your high school mascot or name is Bucktail, you know.
Yep.
You know you're cool.
You're in the middle of it. Yeah. And you know, I just grew up right here. We're just a little one red light town, and grew up hunting, you know, fishing, the whole outdoor deal. Took my hunter's safety course when I was 12 years old. You know, cut my teeth on squirrels, as most, you know, young kids do. You know, used to lose sleep over squirrel season. You know, deer, bear, came a little bit later. You know, deer, I hunted when I was 12. I didn't get to hunt bear till I was about 15 years old. The particular crew at the time that my father hunted with, they wouldn't even allow you to hunt bear till you were 15 years old. I mean, that was, you know, pre-radio days, pre-GPS days. They weren't going to take, you know, a chance of having somebody get lost or you know, not be able, you know, to communicate with a 12-year-old out there. It's a very serious deal for a lot of people up in this neck of the woods.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, like you said, you live in the county that's so famous for it. But you know, talk a little bit about like how you and I met with turkey calls and you know, your passion there. Yeah. And what you turned that into.
Yeah, so I killed my first spring gobbler, I think, when I was 15 years old. It was a big year for me. Also killed my first whitetail buck that year. And I just kind of got the passion. I started practicing calling a lot, entered my first turkey calling contest. Long story short, I ended up buying a mouth call press at the time from a mutual friend of ours, Mr. Ron Epley. Bought a press so I could build my own calls. And then eventually I was building a few here, building a few there. And met a guy. He was also on, you know, the competition rounds at that time. His name is Russ Wagner, who him and I ended up becoming business partners along with my my father. And we started Top Calls. And basically, we've kind of morphed a little bit. Top Calls is probably right now about 20% of what we do. When my son was born, or when he was being ready, when he was being ready to be born, my wife and I were trying to figure out, you know, daycare, and I talked to her and I said, you know, I think if I went after, you know, some private label business, I think I could build a lot of mouth calls for a lot of different companies. So about 80% of what I do right now is I build mouth calls for other companies, you know, throughout the entire country. Now I build them, you know, to their specs. You know, a lot of times they'll actually send somebody in and we'll, you know, sit down and we'll make them, you know, we'll stretch them, we'll, you know, cut them to exactly what they want. So last year, I think I produced about 120,000 mouth calls for the industry. So, you know, that's primarily what we do. And, you know, on top of that, we do friction calls and duck calls and you name it. You know, we're into it.
Yeah. And, you know, Top Calls is a, you know, you make some of the best products out there. And, you know, even here at the Game Commission, we do some private label stuff with you on our box call series. And I think waterfowl calls and it's been done extremely well for you. But you hit on something earlier that I think we need to talk about. And you said you cut your teeth on squirrel hunting. And, you know, as we sit here and watching the leaves change and we're in the middle of squirrel season, it's something that a lot of folks forget about. And, you know, if you want to get a youngster into hunting, squirrel hunting teaches you a whole lot. And, it, you know, when you even relate it to what we're going to talk about today with bears, it teaches you a lot about bear hunting because it teaches you about food source. It teaches you about what trees to look for. And, you know, on a bigger scale, when you get out there in the woods and scouting, you can learn so much by just getting out there and chasing bushy tails around.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's, you know, a kid, you know, the attention span of, you know, a young youth out there isn't, you know, that great. So if you can put him into an environment or her into an environment where there's action, you know, I think that's one thing that we, you know, as we get older, you know, we lose a little focus on. I don't know, we get a little more patient, so we don't need that, you know, the you know, adrenaline. But I think sometimes we forget about, you know, how you know, enthusiastic a kid, you know, can be out there, you know, chasing squirrels around. And I tried to, you know, I got my son, he's big into it, and we shared, you know, some moments, you know, rabbit hunting. I got into that later on. I have a couple, you know, beagles now, and but just, you know, keeping them activated and enthusiastic at, you know, a young age is so important, I think.
Absolutely.
And, it leads in, you know, bear hunting, you could, I mean, there are people, you know, that hunt bears their entire life and may never even, you know, see one. But a squirrel, you know, for a child is important to introduce them to that, you know, to that part of it.
Absolutely.
I mean, small game is such, you know, a big part of cultivating, you know, these kids. Yep,
absolutely. You know, we spoke a little bit earlier, and I really want you to get this story out about, you know, obviously you got into hunting because of your family, your father, and, you know, chased that small stuff. And then as a young boy, you know, back when we were kids, you couldn't hunt till you were 12. So you weren't allowed to go bear hunting with your group. And a lot of people don't know what that is, and maybe talk about that here in a little bit. But talk about that, what happened when you were 15. Instilled this passion. And, you know, just so our folks know, Frank and a lot of his buddies up in Clinton County and all over that northern tier of Pennsylvania, they're very well known for their bear hunting because they live it, breathe it, eat it, sleep it every day from when bear season comes in with a muzzleloader and a bow till it goes out. And, you know, it's not – their group has been very successful. And year in and year out, they put their time in. So I want to talk about, you know, just to introduce that fact of it, because when we got thinking about bears, I'm like, I know the guy we got to talk to. And, you know, we kind of talked earlier, and you were saying, before we go there, you were saying, yeah, you know, don't tag me on this on Facebook because my buddies will get mad at me, because you and I come from the same place. There's a lot of people out there that honestly don't like the game commission. And I'm not going to lie to you. There was a time in my life where I was feeling the same way. And you know what? The game commission does some great things. I mean, we all don't agree with everything that happens out there. And you know, maybe your buddies someday will – I'll invite them down to come hang out and or take them on a tour somewhere and show them what really happens out there. And I'm not saying that they have to love us, but sometimes the game commission is way misunderstood. So we don't want to get you in trouble. And I appreciate you jumping on here today, but tell us how that, when you were 15 years old, you know, what you were waiting for and what happened. Cause that story is incredible.
Well, my dad at the time, he was hunting with a pretty, really good group, from up here. It was the Francis crew, and there was a older lead. He was the patriarch. Was his name was Warren Francis, and he had four sons: Jerry, Jeff, John, and Jesse. And then they had, you know, sons and daughters and whatnot. But that crew at the time, they wouldn't even let you hunt with them until you were 15 years old. So I didn't even begin bear hunting until I was 15. And I remember, you know, that year, John, one of the sons, had a boy. He was my age, and Jeff did, you know, as well. So there was three of us that were, you know, it was our very first year. And so my dad, he drives us down, and there's, you know, a yard full of, you know, trucks, and we walk into the house, and there's his wife was there with, you know, a few other wives, and they're cooking us this miraculous, you know, breakfast, you know, and I mean, there's sausage and there's pancakes and there's, you name it, it was on the table. And I just remember just how family oriented that was. And then we, you know, after we ate, we would, you know, me and, you know, the other kids would stand outside, and I mean, we were ready to go. We are pumped up. You know, we couldn't wait to get out there. And honestly, back then, you know, it was hard to kill a bear. I mean, it was tough. We would hunt often, you know, 3 days, and you never even move a bear. And, but if you did get one, you know, it was a big deal back in the 80s. And Warren, who was, you know, the patriarch, he has since, you know, passed away, but he had killed, I believe when he passed away, I think he had harvested like 12 Pennsylvania bears, which for that time was, wow, you know, incredible. That was, you know, that was unheard of. And he was a great hunter, great man, really, really kind of miss him, learned a lot from him. And then after that, after Warren passed away, that crew kind of, you know, dissolved, and I hunted on my own for a few years. And then I got invited into a crew that I hunt with now. And it was, you know, they only had at that time, I think we only had maybe eight guys. And we were still very, you know, selective. We, you know, it's just, you know, a local group. Nobody comes from away. Everybody that hunts with us, we're kind of all, you know, best friends. And it's just kind of a special, you know, ordeal. Now there's, you know, a few guys I don't see all year, and but, you know, come, you know, October, you know, November now, it's a big deal. So, you know, we get together and we, you know, we have a lot of fun, but we put there's a lot of effort involved, and there's, you know, several other really good, you know, crews in this area, and it's, you know, it's exactly, you know, the same way. You will get out what you put in. And if you don't spend the time in the woods, you know, scouting and doing, you know, the things leading up, they're only going to be, you know, so, you know, successful.
Yeah, you know, the bear's kind of the holy grail to a lot of folks in Pennsylvania that hunt their whole lifetime, like you said, and maybe never even see one. I remember as a kid stories that, you know, my dad and his bunch that, you know, they'd go, they hunted in Clinton County, and they, you know, they did some stuff in Lycoming, and back then in the 80s and early 90s, you know, if somebody shot a bear, it was a big deal. You drove for miles to go look at it. And
yeah,
you know, nowadays it's a little different. We can talk about that in a second. Do you still, is Sam Wirtz still part of your crew?
He is. Yep.
And he's been real successful as well. Another old turkey calling buddy. I know you and him are like family, but and I forget, somebody told me the other day about, you know, now that we can hunt them with a bow and a muzzleloader, and you know, you guys are really taking advantage of that, and you've extended your bear season from 3 days to a lot longer season nowadays, which is pretty cool. And you know, obviously,
right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the Game Commission is actually trying to kill us. you know, by adding all those extra days, it can be a strain. Now, we don't hunt now that it is. I mean, I don't know how many. I haven't even looked, but I mean, there's how many weeks are there now? You got muzzleloader and then bear for two, and so we kind of pick and choose our days now.
Sure.
We can't do it, you know, full time like, you know, we used to do, you know, the whole week of archery, and then we would do all of, you know, rifle. But now we're kind of,
well, sometimes, you know, some people have to go to work for a living.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. Unfortunately, yeah. Me, yeah, you know, turkey calling, you know, it at one time was a hobby, and now it's become a job, and I don't know if I like that or not.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, but, you know, there is lots of opportunities now with the archery seasons, the muzzleloader, and then, you know, obviously the firearm season. And one of the things, and one of the reasons, the opportunities are there is because the bear population is thriving. I mean, obviously, like you said, in the 80s, just getting a bear out of it. And you know, a lot of people, Frank, just to explain it, don't know what a crew or a gang is. And it's a group of guys that get together and, you know, either still hunt together or stand hunt or go out and put on drives. I know you guys like to do pushes or drives, or what do y'all call them up in that country?
We call them drives or chases.
Yeah.
That'd be our watchers and you know, who's going to drive, who's going to watch. There's, you know, that's, you know, the question that we ask ourselves every morning, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, in those groups or whatever you're going to call them, you know, in our state have to be, you know, 25 or less people. So,
yep.
You know, you spread 25 people up over those mountains. It's hard to cover ground. And what you guys have done is taken it to the next level. I mean, as hunters, you know, we do have that. As humans, we're, you know, we're a predator, but we're top of the food chain, but we're the only predator, right, out there that has the ability to reason and figure out a situation. And you know, as you guys progress, carrying on that tradition from when you were 15 years old, your planning and your scouting and all that stuff is way more important than probably pulling the trigger. Because that's where you're getting that's where you're getting the work done, and that's where you're excelling in getting bears and people seeing bears. And if you want to talk about a little bit of the scouting efforts that you all put in.
Yeah, I mean, there are two really good crews up here, and every one of them is surrounded by local guys. So we have that is a huge, you know, advantage, you know, for us, because we live in the heart of it. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy, you know, that's leaving, you know, Lancaster, and he's going to show up here, you know, late Friday night, and he's just going to jump in, you know, because that's where he's been every day since he was, you know, 12 years old on the opening day. He's at, you know, a disadvantage. We scout, and I say we, now this year I'm not going to get a whole lot in because I'm, you know, so busy, but there are guys in the woods right now. As I speak, I guarantee you, they're out, you know, looking. And I'm telling you, we put on miles. I mean, there are days where there'll be 10 or 12 of us that will, you know, look over, you know, a topo map. We'll all pick a ridge or pick a hollow or pick, you know, a flat or somewhere, and we will hike, and we'll all put 5 to 7 miles in. And at the end of the day, that adds up to, you know, 70 miles. And there's days, you know, where we come back and we didn't find anything. So about the only thing you can do at that point is, you know, cross them off. But then, you know, the more time and, you know, the more people that are out looking, you know, sooner or later, hopefully, you know, somebody finds that, you know, holy grail. And I'm not sure what's happened, and maybe a bear biologist, if you had somebody to talk to, but sometime in, you know, the 2000s, probably within the last 10 years, our population here in this neck of the woods has gone up. And I started seeing probably about 8-9 years ago, I started seeing, you know, the mange really become, prevalent. I mean, I would see 3-4 bears a year with mange, bad mange. And, you know, at that point, it was like, what's happening here? Why is this explosion happening with, you know, our population? And I don't know, maybe you can answer that a little more, because I really don't, we don't really have a good answer.
Yeah, I can't, because I'll be honest, Frank, I don't know, personally don't know much about bears. And we're going to have Mark Trinette on here in a little bit, you know, our old bear biologist. We actually just hired a brand new bear biologist. And, you know, we'll ask Mark that question, because we're getting a lot of that on social media where people will see a bear with mange. And you know, that happens when populations go up. And you know, populations are all about one thing, and that's habitat. If the bears didn't have what they needed and they didn't, you know, have good habitat, they wouldn't be surviving like they are today. I mean, obviously they have enough food to cover and water and out there, and you know, food being the most important thing. And let's talk about food for just, we're going to have a lot of people listening, and just even for us that are here today in the studio, you know, if you had to pick a couple things to look for that bear, I mean, I'm sure a bear likes all kinds of things. I mean, their diet's
right,
very wide.
What would
if you were just a hunter going out there to the woods and you wanted to spend the next couple weekends searching for a place to bear hunt, let's say you're not hunting with a gang or whatever, what would you right, look for first, a couple things?
I mean, obviously you need a food source. So what you're going to be looking for is, like, this year, you know, our food source seems to be red oak, and there's a little bit of scarlet oak, seems like a little bit of black oak. But there's hardly any of hickory, and there's hardly any white oak.
And here's something I've learned about that. I'm just going to say this real quick, because yep, I never knew this. White oaks, one of the reasons that this year is they're not prevalent at all is we had that real late freeze, almost, you know, in turkey season.
Yeah.
And that hurt,
yep,
that hurt the mast crop. And then red oaks, which I never, yep, knew till I came to work here, and you might, because of your upbringing or the foresters, red oaks really have their best mast every 2 years. They're kind of on that 2 year cycle. So, like, this year we have,
right,
a lot of red oaks. Next year the red oaks won't be as prevalent, but, you know, 2 years from now. So red oaks on that 2 year cycle. So, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off, but just for anybody, yep, that didn't know that, that's a great fact to, because, you know.
Well, yes, and I mean, I agree with the red oak, but I think that every red oak is on maybe a different cycle.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know last year we had a little bit of red oak, you know, as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a ton of feed this year, so it's going to be interesting. But every year is you know, a different year. So, like I kind of said earlier, if you're coming up to a camp and you're going up on, you know, the same hillside that you walked up on every year, you know, maybe once out of, you know, 5-6 years, you may be into something. But this year, and we haven't found any, you know, congregations this year yet, you know, bears, and we have been in, you know, the past. So it's going to be a little different year. I don't know that we're going to have, you know, the success that we've had. I'm not really getting any good feedback, but you're looking for, like I said, oaks. Now, in every part of the state, you know, it's different, because I am here, and there's a few parts of the state with some people I deal with, they do, in fact, have a white oak, you know, crop.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just, I mean, and it could be within, you know, 40 miles. I mean, you know, things just, if the, you know, the frost line didn't hit, you know, that area, you know, they may have them. So it's just, it's all kind of relative to where you're at. You may be in a where your corn is a food source.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that drives the bear this time of year is going to be food. I mean, if you food and you cover, those are the two things that you're going to want to find. If you find, you know, the bears are eating, you know, excessively in one area, and it's a wide open flat, I can assure you within a mile of there's some cover, you know, somewhere. And if you can find that, if you put those two pieces together, you'll be on to something.
It's kind of like hunting a big buck. I mean, he's, especially one, yep, that's had a few birthdays, he's not going to live in them wide open, yeah, woods. He's going to live somewhere where he can stay away from danger.
And a bear, you know, for some reason, you know, more so, is just, they like, you know, the thicker, seems like, you know, the more awful, god awful thick, you know, the better he seems to acclimate.
Hmm.
And I mean, they are not afraid to go into places where you don't think anything could possibly live, which makes it hard for a single, you know, individual. But if you're, you know, driving for them, you know, walking around, you know, trying to, you know, to kick them up, you know, that kind of helps your odds out a lot. But a bear is, you know, they're it's kind of weird. We've found them already where they'll actually, you know, they'll feed and they'll bed maybe a mile from each other. You know, they'll leave in the evening, you know, they'll travel, they'll eat, and then they'll walk, and, you know, they'll get back to where they want to nest, and they just hang out all day. And, they're a pretty fascinating animal.
Can you find a bear nest in the woods?
I have found a bunch of bear nests in the woods. Yep. And they are pretty impressive.
Is it someplace that a bear goes, not every day, but it spends, I mean, possibly every day they go back and lay in the same area? Is that common? I don't know. I'm just asking because a lot of people that ask about turkeys, like, do they go back and roost in the same tree? And, you know, sometimes right. They will, but sometimes they won't. I'd imagine bears are probably the same way.
A bear nest, I mean, I found, you know, a bunch, but I've probably seen 8 or 10 in my life. And one I jumped, I believe he might have even been hibernating, but I jumped him and it was, we were hunting rabbits. And, but it looked like a giant, you know, eagle nest. And obviously, you know, he was living there. Now, one I found, it was right before the season. And we found it, and he had been, you know, living there, you know, hanging out, and but then by the time we got back in there, he was gone. So I mean, they might use it for, you know, a while, and then be gone.
Right. I mean, it's just they are an amazing animal, and you know, mm-hmm. We get acclimated. You know, we never had bears down here around Harrisburg when I was a kid. Like, if somebody saw a bear, it was like almost like seeing a dinosaur. And,
right.
You know, nowadays they're really prevalent. We've got a lot of bears in this country, and you know, even last year that one of our game wardens had to get down and get one out of inner city Harrisburg that got down there and got running around. It caused a little disturbance. Have you guys ever had any close calls or scary instances with one? You know, that was any time of year. I mean, obviously the worst time I think is in turkey season if you get between a sow and a cubs. But any things that kind of tightened you up a little bit?
We were on a steep river hill, and a bear come down. A bear was hit above me, and it came down and went the whole way down to the railroad tracks. And so after the drive was out, I come down, and I was the bottom guy, so I start following it, you know, the blood, and I was going down, and there was a parked train on it, on the you know, the railroad track. So I followed the blood right up to the railroad bed, and I said, well, he went underneath the train here. So I go to where, you know, the trains, you know, connect, and I start over. Well, here he was underneath the train. He was still alive, and I mean, he was within probably 3 feet of me, and he, you know, he woofed at me. And of course I come jumping out of there 100 miles an hour, and he ended up, you know, dying right on the railroad track.
So
there's always been some things. You know, one of our he was probably 15 years old. He shot one time, and as it ran by him after it was hit, you know, blood got on the tree and his leg, and you know, the backpack, it ran by him so close.
Holy cow!
So yeah, there's been some close encounters.
Yeah, you got to be tough to hunt up in that country. You know, you guys have seen, and it's just a different world up there from even where it is down here. I mean, I know y'all call us flatlanders, and I've been up in those hills, and it's not easy going. You got to be country strong to hunt in that country. That's the bottom line. I mean, you got your work cut out for you. We have a lot of folks. Like, we have some our foresters from McKean County, and he's used to hunting those big woods and that big country, and, you know, talk about a lot of the same things that we discussed. And, you know, no matter what you're hunting, if it wasn't for food or if it wasn't for mating, it'd be tough to hunt those animals. And that's one of the reasons you guys do what you do with your crew, is get out there and you scout and you actually move the bears. And you guys are real successful at moving bears, even in the bow season, and your success rate's pretty good. I think you all really love that season, from what I hear from you and some friends that mutual friends that we have. And I think that's cool. Anytime you get out there in the woods, no matter what you're hunting with, and enjoying and doing the things that you love to do is what it's all about.
Yeah, I know. I know when they started the archery season, you know, we were all kind of scratching our heads thinking, can we drive these things and actually, kill them with a bow? And, we really didn't know. So we tried it for a couple of years, didn't have any success, didn't even move any bears really. And we kind of gave up on it for about a year, and then we come back to it. And I actually wasn't there when we killed, our first one, but my father was. And the guy, above him, it was like a 280-pound male, and he shot it, and then my dad finished it off, with a bow. And they were all kind of staying around saying, oh, man, we can do this. That's interesting. And I think now if you were, to survey, some of our guys now, we would probably pick bow season over rifle season just because, we're less, there's less hunters, and every place that we want to hunt hasn't already been trudged upon. So it's been really good.
That time of year is just beautiful too. I mean, this time of year, we're sitting in it right now. I mean,
it is.
It's just as an outdoorsman, whether you hunt or don't hunt, just to get out in the woods and see what's happening out there. But we're closing in on some time here. I want to talk about couple more things. One is, and this is important, and we see this all the time on social media and wherever, but, like you said about you have another, crew up there and you guys rib and jab each other. But I can tell you this, I know you. If one of those other crew or a guy in town or whatever is lucky and shoots a bear, you're going to go up and shake his hand and say, attaboy, whether that bear weighs 100 pounds or 800 pounds. Because as hunters, we all got to congratulate each other and be happy for one another. Pennsylvania, sometimes we get so jealous and sometimes, really protective of things. And, we're a very small group in this country, is 11 million hunters. We got to stick together and we got to be happy for our fellow hunter. And I'm sure y'all do that.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a mutual respect, and it's kind of weird, during the hunting season, we don't really talk to each other, but afterwards, and every day it's like how many did they get, how many did we get, and then it's just kind of a competing thing a little bit, sure. But it's fun. And one thing that I really want to touch on, and I know this is probably going to make a lot of people angry, and I know there's a lot of people that don't follow this. And for a while, I didn't until, like I said, about 8-9 years ago, I started seeing, manes pop up. And there's the issue of, cubs. Do you shoot a cub? Do you not shoot a cub? And I was against shooting. I just, I said I would never do it. I didn't, it wasn't something that interested me. And I know there are people that know us, and that's going to be the first thing they say. Well, they kill a lot of cubs, and we do. I mean, we kill some cubs, and I used to feel bad about it, but anymore, it's a biological thing. I mean, if you aren't doing what's best for the herd right now, especially here, I mean, every hunter has to make that choice, and that's on them. But, to get on a guy, for shooting a cub bear or, a juvenile, I'm not down with that, because I have seen bears at the last stages of the mange. And I'm going to tell you something that is about the worst possible thing that I think anybody ever wants to see. And we got to get our population, right. And I think the Game Commission is really making some strides towards that with, the muzzleloader season, early. And the extended archery and all that, because we're a little upside down right now. Now, there's not a bear behind every tree up here, but if it's enough where I can see 8 or 9 bears a year that have your mange, that's a problem.
Right, and you, Frank, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, as hunters, we're a conservation tool, and our job is to keep populations in check. And a lot of folks don't realize that, including myself. I'm serious when I say this. When I walk through the doors April in 2019 to the Pennsylvania Game Commission, I thought hunting was a right, and that's what the Game Commission was all about. But hunting's a privilege, and it's just like anything else. It's a tool to keep those in check, and that's probably one of the biggest debates or one side or the other, political, whatever you want to call it, about bear hunting is, shooting a cub or not shooting a cub. The bottom line is, when there's problems out there, when there's disease, when it gets overpopulated, it doesn't matter. A bear's a bear, whether it weighs 50 pounds or 800 pounds. And that's a great point. And thank you for you know, having broad shoulders and making that point to from folks that do it every day. We appreciate that. And I didn't even have to pay you to say that. That's the best part.
And another thing is there's a theory out there, and I'm sure your bear biologist will put it, you know, to bed, but there's a theory out there that if you shoot a smaller bear, that it's a young bear. And I'm going to go on record. One of my friends, this is going back probably 17 years ago. Now, he doesn't hunt with us, but he's a local here. He shot a female. I think she was 132 pounds. And I think I'm almost 100% on this. They aged her out at like 27 years old. It was one of the oldest bears ever killed in the world.
Wow.
And, so when I see, you know, a picture on, you know, Facebook or hunting forum, and I see a guy sitting there with a 100-pound bear, and then I read, the comments under, you're a cub killer, you're this, you're that. Listen, that bear could be, you don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, bears are like people. Some of them are more prevalent to get big. Some of them are going to stay small. And, I believe it's a genetic deal.
I would just be considered a fat cub in bear.
Right. Yeah. I would be a nice, a nice male. I'd be real good, So, but I guess what I'm trying, to get at is you can't judge a bear by, how big it is as far as age. I don't buy that theory. And I think it's a ridiculous theory. And I think, hunters need to get away from that. It's everybody's personal choice. If you don't want to shoot a cub, don't shoot a cub.
Right.
Don't do it.
Right.
But if a guy, like I said, I would never do it. And I was out, this was probably 6-7 years ago, archery season. I look out, and I see two bears, coming at me. And there's not a lot of time, and it's Laurel, and it's this. And one steps out, and I had a clear shot, and I thought it was a 100-pound bear. It was not. It was a little bear. And, things happen. Mm-hmm. And a bear is one of the hardest animals, to judge. I'm not up in, a tree stand, and, we're not watching him for an hour and, trying to measure, his girth. It's not the outdoor channel.
Right. They're not eating donuts out of a barrel.
Right. And I don't get on any of, our crew. I don't care what they shoot, whatever right. they shoot. Cause we got to get it's a conservation thing, and we got to get it right.
Yes, sir. Well, the other thing before we head out of here, I want to talk about real quick, and I've seen some pictures and I've heard some rumors. It's kind of famous is your dad's bear stew. And a lot of folks, you hear it a lot about, bears aren't good to eat. And I know better than that from what I've talked to you about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bear meat is, in my opinion, I'll take every scrap of bear meat that anybody wants to give me. I will trade it, for turkey breast. I'll trade it, for venison. I'll trade it for, whatever. But the only thing that might compete with it would be a grouse.
I agree with you right there. That's one of the best things ever.
Yes. But, there's a way, to doing it. And I'll be quite honest with you. I don't know. I know a little bit about how he does it, but you have to kind of slow cook it, and you have to take off. The bear fat is what gives it its bad flavor. Mm-hmm. So if you can render that, get that off, redo it, put it in. It's a time-consuming process, but I'm telling you, if you have it and it's done right, you will get all that gaminess out, and it will taste like you're eating very good beef, in my opinion.
Wow.
And
it's
outstanding.
Before I leave this earth, I gotta have a bite of your father's bear stew, because it sounds yeah. it sounds pretty amazing. But
yeah. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, he adds, peppers and ram's heads and mushrooms when he has them. And it's a red sauce is what, he uses, but it's just the way, he cooks, the bear, and he gets rid of all, the tallow and the fat, and, renders all that down and gets all that out of there, out of the meat. And I think that's really, you know, the slow cooking. I think if you try to cook bear, you know, quickly, you're going to, it's not going to be real good.
Right. Well, we're about out of time, and I want to thank you so much, Frank, for coming on. I don't want this to be the last time, so maybe before bear season next year, we'll get together and talk about it, and maybe we'll even come up to Renovo and do it in person and maybe get a taste of that bear meat on the air. We'll be doing it by videotape next year, so you're going to have to wear your Sunday best Renovo clothes.
Yeah, and one more thing that I want to throw in here before, for any hunters that are planning to go out here, you know, the food source that they're on right now may not be, you know, the food source that they're going to be on in for your rifle season. I mean, it's going to change. You know, the red oaks are going to start to get, you know, eaten up. And I just want you to be aware that if you find a place right now that has a whole bunch of bears in it and you're thinking, I'm going to go hit that in, you know, November, they may not be there. So, you know, keep checking your spots, you know, keep making sure that they're still, you know, active.
That's a great tip. And that's, just keep putting your homework in, and you know, the more time you can spend out there, I don't care if you're bear hunting, turkey hunting, deer hunting, squirrel hunting, it doesn't matter. Right. The more time you put in out there, the more you study it, the more we let the woods teach us something every day, the more successful you're going to be. However you gauge success, whether it's pulling the trigger or just spending time out there seeing animals. But, hey, Frank, thanks so much for jumping in here, and man, it's good to catch up with you again. We've known each other for probably too long. Both of us had more hair, maybe been a little skinnier when we first met, but you know what? Hunting's got us together, and it's really cool to see y'all's passion up there. But, you know, I'm going to get some of your questions answered. We've got enough information. We're going to have a two-part bear podcast, but Mark Trinette, who has been our bear biologist for probably the better part of the last 20 years, is going to join us next, and I'm going to ask him those couple things you brought to our attention. But thanks again. Have a great fall. Good luck to you, and we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Yep, thank you.
On behalf of the Pennsylvania Game Commission, thank you for tuning in, and we hope that every day of field is filled with memories to last a lifetime. We are committed to leave conservation and wildlife better for the future, and we hope you can tune in next time to the PGC's Call of the Outdoors.